Hello and welcome to Dirty Lazy Girl, a podcast that offers realistic girlfriend support and problem solving for imperfect people like me. I'm Stephanie Laska, author and creator of Dirty Lazy Keto. I lost 140 pounds by breaking all the rules and becoming a weight loss rebel.
And I'm Tamara Snezik, a professor of sociology, Stephanie's co-host, and her Dirty Lazy Girl partner in crime. Every week, we'll tackle a potential obstacle in your way with unconventional, dirty, or lazy problem-solving strategies. Let's get you started.
It's season three of the Dirty Lazy Girl podcast, and today's obstacle is how to change your eating habits.
Well, today, we are going to get started with 21 strategies about habit change that we learned from the happiest guru herself. She loves to talk about habits, and this is author Gretchen Rubin. So we are going to be applying the habit changing strategies and concepts from one of her books called Better Than Before. And we are going to do this specifically to the area of eating.
I'm excited. And there's so many, there's 21. In fact,
21.
It's too many to cover in one episode. So we're going to break this up into two parts. So today we're going to do the first half, the part A, and then our next podcast will cover the last. So it's going to be so helpful. I know it. And I can't wait to get started. So let's take a quick break and then we'll get started.
Awesome. Well, creating easy and satisfying low carb habits, for me, it was critical to my weight loss success. So with my version of Dirty Lazy Keto, I found it a lot easier to whip up delicious treats when I was able to help create some good habits for myself. So I share 100 of these habit recipes in my quick fix low carb cookbook, which is called the Dirty Lazy Keto No Time to Cook Cookbook. And these are all weight loss recipes that you can make in less than 30 minutes. That includes prep time. And you can pick up your copy today at Costco, Target, Sam's Club, BJ's, Meijer's, Barnes & Noble, a local bookstore, and of course on Amazon. So order your copy today.
Thank you, Stephanie. And I think there's so many strategies because not all of them work for everyone. Like some work better for others. So we're going to share what works for us personally and what doesn't work and the kind of personality types that they work for.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because some of these I was like, yeah, I could never do these at all. And then other ones I'm like, oh yeah, I've tried that and it was a total disaster bomb. And then I was like, oh yeah, this one I do all the time. So it'll be kind of fun to see what plays out, you know, for our listeners too.
Yeah. So let's get started.
Okay. Got 21. So we're going to do half today. Let's do it.
Half today. First half. And the very first one is a know your personality and work habits around your personality. And Gretchen Rubin has, I think, four different, I don't know if she calls them personality types or just different styles. There's a rebel, upholder, obliger, and questioner.
And we don't want to really go into all that because I think that could be a whole episode and that's Gretchen's book.
Yeah.
But you know who you are, right? Like, what's your kind of style?
My style is what she calls obliger, but basically I am a social person and I like to do things with people and I'm very motivated when I have other people hold me accountable. So that's why I like doing workouts in a group when I exercise, because I like the social part of it. And I like that, oh, they're going to miss me if I'm gone. Or so for me, knowing that I'm that kind of person, I should use strategies that are more accountability focused, like, you know, make a commitment to a friend, or a commitment to a class, anything that holds me accountable in my
social circle.
Like
if you were to tell your teaching, like your social class or whatever, that you're only going to eat a certain food today, or I don't know, like how would that actually work? Like with an eating habit, have you come up with anything good?
Yeah, it would be announcing that I'm on a diet on my social media or to my friends, wherever. And even asking people, you know, like, my sister and I used to text each other like, oh, how did your day go? Did you stay on your, you know, on your plan? Did you write down what you're eating or whatever kind of diet habit you want to form, whether it's be journaling or eating certain foods. So if you're like me, then you would have a buddy that you can report to or something that will publicly keep yourself accountable, like announcing it on a social page or to friends.
Something public, huh?
Yeah, for
that
me,
makes that makes sense. Yeah, I could see how that would totally be effective as a habit changing strategy for you.
Yeah. Are you an obliger?
Oh, no.
What are you?
Oh, I would be what you would call the worst child that you could ever imagine having, which is the rebel child, where every time someone tells me what to do, even if I want to do it or was thinking about doing it, I will completely do the opposite. So I'm a challenge. That's another word for it. Yeah. So for me, when I'm thinking about like forming an eating habit and I want to work with myself with that personality type of being kind of doing the opposite and kind of, you know, pushing back all the time, I have to really make sure that I make my own rules when it comes to like eating habits or changing an eating habit, as opposed to trying to follow someone else's rule.
Yeah. I mean, and thus you develop the whole dirty, lazy keto. There because you it go. Was like, I'm going to do keto my way.
I have to do it my way. Right. So yeah, that's critical, right? And not one personality type is going to match up, you know, with the same rules as somebody else. Yeah. So you have to kind of really know your identity. And that's why that was our first strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. What's our second strategy?
Number two is kind of similar. She calls it distinctions. Mm-hmm. And how we interpret that would be, you know, what works for other people may not work for you. Is that how you interpreted distinctions?
That's how I do it. And so maybe even just beyond personality, but even just your tastes. Like, you know, when we
talk
about this. Yeah. Like when
budget.
You talk about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But your budget, your taste, like some people just hate artificial sweeteners. So don't eat it.
Yeah, you know, exactly. You hate avocados. Don't eat an avocado.
Right. So create a habit that works around your quirks and your likes.
Kind of like quirks. I like that. Thinking of it like a quirk or your preferences.
Yeah. So it's just a little bit beyond, it's not just personality, but it's your taste, your personal choices mm-hmm. and quirks. And so don't make a habit that goes against that. Like, you know, if you don't like some kind of broccoli, then don't.
Yeah. Don't be trying to force the broccoli on yourself. Okay. Okay. Now I get it. So I get number two. So I'm thinking of an example right away. That would be a distinction for me. And that would be, I hate meal plans. I cannot stand, even the word meal plan makes me bristle, Tamara. Like I go, like it really gets me upset. Yeah. And I know I've talked about this before and I never put two and two together until you talked about quirks. And it's because I don't like doing the same thing as other people. So a meal plan technique is a habit builder. Yeah. It wouldn't work for me because I don't like being told what to do.
But yet some people need a meal plan.
I never thought of that, to be honest. Yes,
they have to have it.
Aha moment. I totally did.
They need structure. And that's
and they need accountability, like you said, like following through. I never put that together.
Yeah. And some people, diets fail if they don't have that kind of more plan. And I think that's why sometimes on the Dirty Lazy Keto site, a lot of people are like, where's the meal plan?
I'm like, you know, no meal plan. But now I'm starting to get it.
But if you need that, then know that and then create your, you know, if you're going on a new diet, then sit down and make a plan. Make a plan based on your taste and your habits. If you need the structure, give yourself the structure. Or like you, the structure is going to sabotage you, then take out the structure.
What about you? How would you work around your proclivities?
Yeah, I have to have somewhere in between because I don't, if I have too structured a plan, I start feeling deprived and pissed.
Like, well, how would that be a distinction then? Like in terms of number two.
Yeah, but I can't have it too loosey-goosey like your style either with no rules. So I guess I need some structure, but with a little bit of flexibility, that would be my personal thing. And so that's something I've had to, actually, I don't even know where that's at yet. I'm still learning that. So that's something like I have to work on learning, like how much structure I need and when does it get too much? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just a tweener somewhere in there.
So you're kind of a tweaker. I get that. But isn't this helpful? Because it's like acknowledging that the number two strategy of being, you know, acknowledging you're different from other people and you might need it in a different way. I think it can be very helpful and it makes you embrace who you are and acknowledge what you need. So I think that's kind of helpful, actually.
Yeah. And I think in terms of dieting, it means find something that works for you. Make it work for you. And if it's so crazy strict a diet that it doesn't allow for some structure or not structure, then pick another one that does. Otherwise, your habit will never form.
For you.
for me or anyone who's
because that's your proclivity about having that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I get that.
All right. Our number three is to form a habit, a successful habit, you have to do monitoring. And this is the follow-up, you know, keeping track of, are you on your plan, whatever the plan that you decided on, is it, are you sticking to it? Are you doing it? Are you just forgetting it? You know?
Okay.
So monitoring, I think this varies too. Like some people need a lot of monitoring and some people need a little. So this can vary based on your personality.
Yeah. And this is just a strategy for changing an eating habit. So how you would interpret this, it may be as broad as a plan, or it may be as specific as, you know, I want to drink more water each day, or I wanted to eat, healthier fats earlier in the day so I stay fuller. But how you would interpret that would be different, you know, according to what it is a food habit you're trying to change.
Yes.
So
or something. Go ahead.
I was just going to give it. We're so excited today. I've been thinking about this nonstop. So, okay, you go first.
Well, I was just saying, it's like monitoring could be monitoring your weight loss. Like, do you weigh every day? And we have a whole episode about that. But that depends on, again, your personality, what your goals are, you know, and if it's not weighing, maybe you should do something like measuring or your pant size, something like that. But that's another form of monitoring.
Yeah. So how I was interpreting this, because we're focusing on changing a food habit, that's how we're kind of framing this whole episode. Mm-hmm. So for me, I, you know, specifically see a correlation between what I eat in terms of like the number of vegetables. And for me, how much I weigh. So I can totally see if I'm not monitoring how many vegetables, and I mean low carb vegetables, I eat on a given day, I can see how it affects, you know, my size and how I feel about myself and how much like fuller I feel. So for me, I really try to monitor how many low carb vegetables I eat in a day. I keep track of it. You know, I don't hold myself to like a specific number, like, oh, I have to, but I do keep track and I am always monitoring to make sure I'm having between like 7 and 10 servings of low carb, healthy vegetables every single day.
Yeah.
What about you? How do you monitor a food habit?
Well, it's the same with me, but more with protein.
Okay.
Because I tend not to eat enough. And when you don't have enough on this diet, you'll feel hungry. And you won't feel as, you know, much energy. So, so for me, the way I monitor it is just at every meal, take a second to say, do I have a healthy protein on there? Is it going to make me feel good? And is it enough? And should I replace something else, you know, and put in a little bit more protein? So that's just an example of, you know, one of the things
I keep in mind. Monitor just the meal in and of itself. Yeah. It's like, is there protein there and in general? Cause I know when I was first starting out, I never ate protein. Like I really didn't. I would go all day long and maybe have it at dinner, but I never ever incorporated protein.
No. In fact, now I try to make it the center. Like, you know, I have my turkey bacon in the morning kind of because I like it. And so then it's just the choice is really, what do I have with it that's healthy and stays with my plan? But it's a whole mindset change, but you do it through monitoring, like just taking a minute to look and see what you're eating.
Yeah,
you know,
because if you don't, I mean, for me anyway, I manage what I monitor. And the analogy I like to make for myself is like, if I went out shopping and I only had cash, I can't put things in the shopping cart unless I have money to pay for it. So for me, I kind of think about my weight and my net carb spend in the same way. It's a neutral thing. It's not like you're bad, you're good. This food's good. Mm-hmm. This is bad. It's like, you only have so much money to spend. And that's how many net carbs I have to spend. So it is what it is. I mean, there's no credit. You know what I mean?
Darn it.
There's no credit card when it comes to weight loss. And I think that's where myself, I got in trouble in the past is I would always push it I'd always not monitor it. That was number one, my problem. And then number two, I'd try to pay it in the future. Like, oh, I'll work out a lot on Saturday, or I'll cut back and not eat anything for 4 days starting next Thursday. Yeah. So monitoring for me has been really helpful.
Yeah, me too. In fact, I think most successful people when they're changing their eating habits have some way of monitoring. I think what can vary is how you do that, but there's got to be something.
You have to have some kind of monitoring.
Yeah.
For what it is you're working on. Otherwise you'll never know.
Yeah. Well, number four is what Gretchen calls foundation. And what she means by that, at least what I think she means, is that there's certain habits that are a foundation for other habits. So if you don't have these foundational things under control, then your good habits you're trying to establish won't work. So like some of the foundational things she talks about is getting enough sleep, getting enough basic nutrition and exercise, and, you know, not having a life full of anxiety. You got to get those things under control before, you know, you step into this other habit. And I think we forget that. Because it is true. Like when I'm anxious and not sleeping well, that's when my eating's the worst, to be honest with you. So for me, I totally see this, although we ignore it. I think it's the problem. We don't look at those deeper things that we need to, you know, tackle before stepping to the, oh, I'm going to cut out, you know, breads out of my life. But hey, wait, first, are you stressed all day? And are you not getting sleep or, you know, exercise? Then maybe you should back up a bit.
So it sounds like for you, the foundation that's important is having your emotional needs met, you know, having your anxiety under control, your stress level, and then you can build nutrition or a food change on top of that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's a more of a priority, and I don't see it that way. I have to remind myself that those are crucial, because it'll just sabotage my diet. If you know what I'm saying? If I'm anxious and nervous and not getting those needs met.
I love this conversation, because the more I feel like you're sharing with me, the more I'm just understanding where you're coming from all the time. Like that totally makes sense now that I'm looking at like all these other podcasts we've done, and you've talked about like sleep or nutrition or stress or the warning signs of when you feel exhausted. So for me, it's like all coming together right now. This stuff works, people.
Yeah, I know.
It does. Like, woo, Tamara's on to something.
Yeah.
So for me, how I interpret foundation, I wasn't thinking necessarily about myself, but I observe this quite often in the Facebook support group where people join and they want to get started, but they don't want to learn anything necessarily. They don't want to, build a foundation of learning about what dirty lazy keto is specifically. And I think they've heard, this is what I've observed. I've observed people have heard keto in the media, heard keto from friends. So they just dive in and they think they don't need to learn anything. And they just start eating, you know, cream cheese, bacon, heavy whipped cream, and foods that maybe aren't going to help them lose weight necessarily. And then I observe this, they end up feeling frustrated, very constipated, and sometimes gaining weight. And then they get angry and then they quit. And it's almost a form of self-sabotage, really.
Yeah.
Not taking the time to, you know, and I'm not saying I'm the guru here, but my dirty lazy keto is different from a ketogenic strict diet. So I think that taking a little bit of time to get my book at the library or, you know, read a little bit and get that foundation before you try to, you know, lose 50 pounds overnight.
Yeah. I know. And then they blame the diet. Like, this diet sucks.
I'm like, and I always say, did you read the book? And they're like, no. I'm all, well, there we go. Because my book is a little bit different.
Are you eating bacon all day?
Well, and then, you know, people do that and then they get mad. So that's my opinion of foundation. I think you have to do baby steps and you have to get the basics first before you move on to wanting to expect big giant changes in your life.
Yeah. And I would say, to me, this reflects our magic pill thinking, like just give me a magic pill that will dissolve the fat off my body and I'll look fabulous and be happy. And then the problem is that magic pill does not exist. And if it did, you still wouldn't be happy once you lost the weight, because you haven't addressed your self-esteem, all those foundational things, you know, all the stress, all those other things. Yeah.
It is. I know. Each one of these we could probably talk about for a whole episode. Let's get real.
I know. And I don't want to, and I sound judgy, but I've been there. Like, I want a magic pill, Stephanie. Like, give me a magic pill. I'm like, I want this. But then I have to say, you know, I'm old enough to know that that's not going to work.
Well, sadly. Just speaking from the other side, and this is a truth that no one wants to hear, the magic pill and the being thinner or the losing the weight isn't what makes you happy.
No.
I know that's shocking information, but it's the journey that actually makes you happy. It's the little incremental changes of changing your eating habits, changing your nutrition, learning to put yourself first. That's actually what gives you the joy, because you can get all the way to a size 6 and still feel like crap and feel ugly. You know what I mean? And have low
self-esteem.
Or you can be a size 22 and feel fabulous and feel strong and confident and powerful. Mm-hmm. So really the weight is not the magic pill. The weight is just a symptom of a larger problem.
Right. I agree.
I'm but getting off the soapbox.
I know.
Watch out. We're getting off track. We're getting off track here.
We are. And that's why there's 21 of these, because it's not easy making a new habit. You know,
especially when it has to do with food. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was an emotional topic for me, I guess.
It is. And that foundational stuff, that's a tough one. I mean, that makes you look deep at your life and, you know, where is your happiness coming from? And what are the things that you need that you're not getting other than, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of a painful one. Number five is much easier.
Okay. Number five is a real practical scheduling.
Put it on the calendar, people.
That one's I like that one.
It's so simple. Does this work for you, Tamara?
It does. Making a routine, I like a routine. So if I can get into a routine of something, not necessarily putting it on the calendar, but like having a Tuesday class, like since I'm an obliger and I like my social accountability. And then if it happens weekly, even better. And that's, in fact, I had my boot camp was 3 times a week. And that was super helpful. And it did get me in like just the habit of doing it. Or I think one of the things that you do a lot, which I've borrowed, is to lay out your exercise clothes the night before. And that's a little routine thing. That's like, it's like a scheduling thing, but less informed, you know, more.
It's like you're obliged to your clothes because they're waiting for
you. Yeah. So it's,
they're staring at you.
It's my unique form of scheduling.
Yeah. Well, it can be interpreted in different ways, right? Like for me, I remember I had a friend who I used to meet once a week for running, and I hated it, to be honest. I hated having it on the calendar. I hated that she expected me to be there. And I loved this friend. So it was like this strange phenomenon that I fought with every week. And the reason why is because I don't like being told what to do, even if it's my friend. It doesn't matter if it's a parent, a child, a spouse. For me, I just don't like those expectations put on me from someone else. However, that being said, when I reach out to my friend and I initiate something and want to get together and put it on the schedule, or an eating habit, like putting, you know, I'm going to have this every, you know, Taco Tuesdays. When I make that decision, then I can stick with it and be successful, but I have to be the one to make that choice.
Yeah. And that's a total know yourself.
That's me. I'm the challenge.
So you have, well, you schedule it, but it has to be your schedule on your time when you want.
Or it has to be someone suggests it in a different way. Like, hey, what do you think about getting together to go to lunch? Then I say, oh, well, how about Tuesday? Then that works for me because I had some kind of buy-in and decision-making.
Yeah.
But it's the same with my eating habits. I have to be the one to initiate that change. I can't have someone else say, use this low-carb tortilla. It's really good. I'll be like, no, I have to try it and decide for myself. I'm such a pain.
But then you own it once you do, which is really good.
And I own it forever. Yeah.
That's great. And that's our number six, which is accountability, which is also a know yourself one. Again, accountability. And I mentioned it as one of my.
This is a strength for you, right? Like a strength, accountability.
Yeah. And so I mentioned texting my sister, you know, how did you do today on our diets, and keeping each other accountable that way. And another way too is I found for exercise, which is part of my weight loss goal, was to sign up for races because when we were running, and that obliged me to do it. And it really kept me motivated and develop a habit of running every day. I'm like, oh, I have this race coming and I don't want to look stupid and I don't want to let my friends down who signed up with me. So those are some strategies I use to just for accountability. And this one's super important for me.
Mm-hmm. I can hear it in your voice, just the way you're talking about it. Like, it's important to it's me. Coming. This to me is important. Like I can tell this accountability is it's probably a strength for you. Like this is a habit changing, you know, strategy that is probably very powerful.
And that's why during COVID, it's been harder for people like me because I can't meet with friends to exercise. My group classes aren't meeting. There are no races out there. So it's been a real struggle.
To look for new ways to be accountable.
Yes, because I don't have that. You know, I've had to turn online a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. No, there's always a creative way for you.
Right.
I'm sure. You're a problem solver. Well, for me, I have to be very accountable. It's probably no surprise based on what I've been sharing, but I have to be accountable to myself. And so this was one of the reasons why I hated Weight Watchers and I sabotaged myself there because I didn't like having a little booklet and getting on a scale and having someone else give me a ribbon and telling me what to do and how much to weigh and how much to eat. Oh my God. Just talking about it is like getting me all worked up. So for me, what I've learned is my eating habits have a direct correlation to my physical health. And so I've been tying that together and I use specifically my health data app on my iPhone. And I open that every night and I get so much joy and happiness, Tamara, and looking at my how much physical activity I did, how many hours I was standing or sitting. I look at my resting heartbeat. I look at trends. I look at my new one is the cardio fitness level, and I make sure that it's high. And I know this sounds crazy, but I literally lay in bed and like, oh, like all that accountability. I can see it. And I don't show anyone. I've never even talked about it until today, but that gives me great accountability into what I'm eating because I can see it pays off. I can see it. And I love getting my test results too from labs. Like when I go to the doctor, love to see my blood work, my cholesterol. I have all my previous ones. I look at them all. I mean, I'm kind of a dork.
No, but it's good. I mean, actually I get joy from that too. Maybe not as much.
You didn't get as excited as I did right now.
I'm no, just like, but, but I do like, you know, seeing the doctor's numbers, you know, on the labs.
So powerful. Yeah. It just makes me feel accountable. I'm like, look, there's proof. The proof, that's must be what it is. Because I think that, you know, and we'll get to this a little bit later, but I love seeing that my way of eating works. I love it.
Yeah.
And if I have tangible, physical, you know, medical statistics.
It's like, and it's also a little check.
A check.
If you're not, like, if you're off course a little bit, like, you know, let's say your cholesterol is high, you're like, okay, maybe I need some healthier fats, you know, just a little check. To keep you on track.
It works for me.
Yeah. Okay. What's number seven?
Number seven is kind of an interesting one. It's called first steps. And this can be interpreted in a few different ways, but basically, you know, we acknowledge the fact that whenever there's an opportunity to take first steps with an eating habit or any habit, the first steps you take are very powerful. And if you're aware of it, as Gretchen Rubin says in her book, she suggests don't stop at all. Like once you get going in the right direction and you're making strides, like literally taking strides in the right direction, she recommends don't stop. Don't take any breaks like for vacation or, you know, this and that holiday, because those first steps, there's a momentum to it, right?
Yeah.
So how does that translate into eating habits then for you?
Well, I've sabotaged many a diets because, oh, it's the holiday. I'm just going to take a break. And then I never get back on. So for sure, I've experienced that. And it's funny, you're really, when you do say, you know what, I'm not going to break and I'm going to go on this vacation. I'm going to eat right on my vacation. And even if I mess up a little bit, I am still more likely to stay on it, even if I messed up. But the fact that I just don't, you know, disappear from the diet for a week or two, because that has really, really, really messed me up. And she also says, don't use the I'll start tomorrow. when you take the first step is also really important. She says, do it now. I think we've recommended that in previous podcasts too, is that if you start tomorrow, you never will.
Yeah.
So start right away and then keep going and don't stop.
I mean, I might be interpreting this a little bit on the flip side, but I was thinking about this example yesterday, and my kids started their first day of in-person school yesterday. So for first steps, I realized it was really powerful because that's an opportunity, like Gretchen said, to establish some good eating habits.
Yeah.
So here's a funny thing, though. The second they both got home from school, they wanted to go get ice cream. And I'm like, what the heck are they talking about? Like ice cream? I did not mention ice cream. I don't really eat ice cream anymore, but they wouldn't stop talking about it. And my son finally explained to me, Mom, we went to get ice cream after the first day of school ever since kindergarten. And I had forgotten all about that, but he had not, because this was a first steps momentum thing, a first day of school. In his brain, it was tied to going to Baskin Robbins. So I was like, I'm not going, but here's the keys and here's $10. And off they drove. But that was an example, right? Of first steps. It's that momentum of the first something or other.
Yeah.
Good or bad. It is what it is.
Yeah. And keeping it going, it'll keep going as you keep feeding it.
I'm like, they're going to be in college, like freaking getting their ice cream after school, I guess.
Well, number eight is totally related to that, which is if you do mess up, she says, a clean slate is a great opportunity to start a new habit. So just start fresh. Like, okay, if you mess up on your diet, just set it aside. That was the past. I'm like, okay, I'm going to start with a clean slate. Forgive myself, move on, maybe try it a little differently. And this time, you know, work harder at keeping my momentum going or whatever was the issue that you had before. And I think a lot of people form new habits when they've had a clean slate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's,
you know, and I think there's something to that, wiping it clean, like just forgiving,
and the forgetting. Fresh starts occur at many times. Like for some people, it occurs in January. Other people, it's every Monday. Some people, it might be September when the kids go back to school, or a fresh job or moving into a new house. So I just shared about yesterday, my kids went to the first day of school. So they left the house and I was thinking about all these habit strategies, right? Because we're talking about it today. So I thought, well, it's a clean slate for me too, because the kids finally left. I'm still working from home. I'm going to take advantage and start today with a clean slate, wipe all my, you know, craziness from COVID in the past and start my meal prepping right now and get used to that. Get into that routine again where I got sloppy in the past. They left. I started getting my, you know, defrosting meat, chopping vegetables. I started making spaghetti and it felt really good. And then this morning I woke up, boom, I was already motivated for some God knows reason at 6 a.m. to start getting dinner ready. It's like a clean slate, right? It's a powerful habit changing strategy that you can use.
Yeah. And you can create a clean slate. I mean, sometimes it's created for you, like the new year or your kids going off to school, but you can try to do it yourself, you know, by buying something new that will help you, like a new, you know, cooking tool or a monitoring tool or a new scale or whatever it is that helps your mindset say, oh, this is brand new. This is a new day, a new start.
It's
whatever.
A new day.
Yeah.
It's a new dawn and I'm feeling good. Okay. I'm singing. We better go to number nine.
I know. We're all in a good mood because our kids are back in school.
Right. We're like, hello. Hello.
The next one, she calls lightning bolt. And this is a different way of starting a habit, but it can be a deeply effective one too, which is not because it's came from some small steps. Like we talk a lot about baby steps, but she brings up the opposite. Sometimes a lightning bolt comes out of the sky and just hugely impacts you. And that creates a major change in your life. I mean, a more serious one is your friend dies of lung cancer. And then that spurs you to quit smoking. Like you're like, oh my God, I see, you know, that I need to do this. Or sometimes it's a midlife crisis, or maybe it's a maybe you've been diagnosed with diabetes. That is like the wake up call lightning bolt for some people, or losing a job or turning 60. I had a friend who read a book about being a vegetarian, and she that deeply impacted her. And she was a vegetarian. She started a vegetarian habit and lasted for like 20 years. So if you have those moments, you know, she recommends capitalizing on the moments to motivate your change and to keep you going. So if that happens to you and you feel really motivated, then just that's the perfect time to really run with it.
Just go with it, right? Yeah. I think I was trying to, you know, really reflect if I've had those lightning bolt moments, and I'm especially when it came to food and my weight. And I've shared this many times, but I was on a plane for work headed back east, and I sat down on the plane. I was all dressed up for a work thing, and I couldn't get the seatbelt to close on the airplane. And it was the first, and I had been such denial about how much I weighed. I didn't even know really how much I weighed. And I didn't think there was anything wrong. I thought everything was fine. But then that moment when the seatbelt wouldn't clasp, and I mean, my heart is like racing just talking about it. For me, that was such a lightning bolt moment where all of a sudden I realized it all at once, where it hit me like, I need to make a change. And for me, that was a moment I had to capitalize, because that was an opportunity. It was like a wake up call for me to, you know, to do something. And it worked.
Yeah.
Have you had a lightning bolt moment for your health, Tamara, at all, or about eating habits?
Yeah. I mean, this is an embarrassing one.
Well, I shared one too. So please don't leave me alone.
I know.
I got more to come, sister.
Well, it's when the doctor tells me to lose weight. And it's like, you know, I can ignore it. I can pretend I don't need to. And, but when you hear that from this health expert, it's like, it's devastating. But at the same time, it's a big lightning, you know, kick in the butt. And that can really push me to really get better about my eating habits. So yeah, that's an embarrassing one, but
you know, no more embarrassing than pretending to be asleep so the flight attendant right. wouldn't have to give me a lap band. I mean, exactly. That's what I did. I hid my jacket over my my chest area and I pretended to be asleep. And I mean, this was a long time ago, but I can recall the way the lights were down on the plane. I can recall what she looked like. I can recall everything because it was such a powerful moment for me when that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes we need that. I mean, as devastating as those moments can be, they do trigger change.
It can. It can. And that's what we're talking about. Like that can be an opportunity if you choose to recognize that it's happened.
Yeah. And then use it to launch a new way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're going to wrap it up with number 10, but that's not all though, because we have 10 today and then we're doing another half next episode. But, so what's number 10?
Abstaining. This one, again,
it sounds like something teenagers are told to do.
Yeah. And this is more of an all or nothing. And this one works for my husband a lot. When he does a habit, he has to, you know, like if he wants to cut out carbs, he has to do it very strict and everything goes and no, a little of this or a little of that, it has to be all of it gone. And that's what works for him. Mm-hmm. This does not work for me.
Okay. Well, then, you know, so you just skip. Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. I use, you know, small portions. Now I have to use a lot of effort to make sure they stay small. So it's a different problem, but I have to use a different strategy.
That's okay. Yeah. These aren't all or nothing. You don't have to do them all. They're just some tools to think about.
Right. What about you?
Well, I'm kind of thinking an in-between story, which is kind of fun because it fits mm-hmm. into what you were saying. But I have a coworker that I go out to lunch with often, and we always end up at the same Greek restaurant because it's convenient. And mm-hmm. every time we go there, the same thing happens. And we've been there like, dozens of times. Mm-hmm. Every single time the lady comes by and she wants to bring our food with a bread basket of pita bread, fresh homemade pita bread. And I would prefer to abstain altogether because I don't want to deal with the stress or the anxiety of should I, shouldn't I, how much, a bit. I just say, no, thank you. And she goes, oh, I'll have some. I guess I'll just have one piece. And she goes through this whole routine. It's like it's seriously a routine. Every single time it's the same. She has the bread basket next to her. She tells me she's going to have one piece. She eats the one piece, but then struggles the entire meal, you know, longing, staring at the bread, lovingly wishing, wanting more, wrestling over the bread, waffling over the bread. Every time it's like almost, I mean, I don't want to like laugh, but it's comical to watch the inner turmoil that she feels and then ends up eating the whole bread basket and then feeling horrible and talking about it for the rest of the day. And I'm like, well, why don't you just abstain? Like, for me, it's so freeing to go, I don't want any.
And
it's hard in the moment to say, I don't want any. But once it's gone, then I don't feel that stress. But she goes through the opposite where she's just miserable. Yeah.
That is the benefit of this one is that it takes away the decision fatigue. Like, oh my God, should I, you know,
and the guilt.
The answer's no, always no. And that,
boom,
and
done.
You have to think about it.
You're so free from the pita bread forever. Yeah. Or whatever you choose to abstain from. It's kind of like, I think about alcohol, like for Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't like go, I'll have one sip and I'll have one glass. Or smoking, you don't have one cigarette here and one there and then a pack on Saturday and not tomorrow. You quit and then you're done. So for me, it's similar. I find this to be probably one of the most effective strategies here.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Great. We're all different.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I'm curious what strategies our listeners have successfully used to change an eating habit. Email us at Stephanie@dirtylazyketo.com or through Facebook or Instagram at Dirty Lazy Keto. If your comment is read on air during season 3, contact Stephanie to receive a prize. Now, before we go to our final hacks, let's take a quick break.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I know you're shocked to hear about this, but in my experience of losing 140 pounds, I found a lot more success in working with my habits versus against. So for example, Tamara knows, she laughs at me, I like to eat to relax. Now don't judge, but instead of getting mad at myself and trying to change that habit, I've learned to substitute low carb, higher fat, higher protein, high fiber recipes that I include in the Dirty Lazy Keto No Time to Cook cookbook. And actually, in all of my cookbooks, there's an icon for these specific types of recipes. If you're like me and you like to eat a lot of food at once, and the icon is called I'm Hangry. So look for that cute little icon. It's at the top of all the recipes that I recommend when you're in those situations. So I think it's hilarious, somewhat embarrassing, but there it is. It's out there for the world to judge.
Thanks, Stephanie.
You're welcome. I'm all red now.
All right, let's wrap it up by sharing success stories about creating a good eating habit. So which one of these strategies do you use the most often, Stephanie?
It's funny because there's quite a few that I have that are favorites, but I was thinking about number two, the distinctions, what works for you may not work for me. And I think I'd really like that. Plus number one, with my rebel tendency, I like to prove people wrong. I get a lot of fire and motivation from that. So when I'm with people that I feel like are judging me or, you know, preaching to me about the benefits of eating toast, or, you know, but then they're struggling and feeling miserable, I like to kind of eat things with my lunch or dinner just to poke at them. And I'll put like sour cream or guac on my Chipotle chicken bowl and like languishly eating it like, oh, the sour cream is so delicious. Oh, I'm so, you didn't have any on yours? Oh, you must. Oh, that's okay. All right. So I know that's kind of snarky, but, you know, it kind of works. What about
whatever
you?
Works. Well, I already said I'm sort of an upholder. So accountability is this, you know, the kind of strategy that works best for me. And I've talked about some of those, but I thought I'd give some tips for how to be really accountable in a crazy way. You can do a commitment contract. So for instance, like if you break your contract, then you have to pay some penalty, like give money to a political group that you don't like. Or in a positive one, you can give a bunch of money to your favorite charity or something like that. So, you know, I'm going to stick with this eating habit for 6 months. And if I'm not, then I have to, you know, have this penalty somehow. my version of that, this is another version of that, which combines accountability and competition for me, is joining contests. So that's like a commitment contract for me. Like, oh, okay, I'm going to commit to entering this contest and then, you know, beating you all with my my weight loss. So that's another version of the same kind of accountability commitment.
I love it. Well, the big message here, listeners, is you don't have to change your personality to develop new eating habits. The trick is, though, to find what works for you, not other people. By leaning into how you like to do things, you will be 100 times more effective in creating a new eating habit.
And are you enjoying the Dirty Lazy Girl podcast? Show your support by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're listening on YouTube, give the episode a thumbs up, leave a comment, and subscribe to the Dirty Lazy Keto channel.
Well, we love reading your listener comments and reviews. And in fact, I'd like to share a comment that was just left on YouTube. And this is by Wanda. She left this 2 days ago, so it's hot off the press. And this was on our episode about Does the Keto Diet Scare You? How to Face Fears and Try New Things. It was episode 3 of season 3. And Wanda wrote, "No matter where you are in life, remember you are unique and beautiful right where you are. I had to learn this when I didn't feel like I measured up. Just go for it. You will find you have more people like you than not." Thank you, Stephanie and Tamara.
Oh, that's lovely.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please tell a friend. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen to podcasts.
For more information about what we talked about today, or just to get in touch, visit DirtyLazyKeto.com. See you next week.